I got it. Come and get it. Who's your daddy? Who's your baby? Who's your buddy? Who's your friend? And who's the one guy that you come running to when your little life starts tumbling?
We'll put a boot in your ass. It's the American way.
Well, American man.
God bless America.
I'll be an American where at least I know I'm free.
American girls and American guys. We'll
touch your ass.
I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag.
You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took it across.
Does this country remind you of the America that you grew up in? Do your children enjoy the same freedoms that you did when you were young?
Do you think that you can take me on? You must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me.
Just how far are you willing to be pushed? When are we gonna put our collective foot down and tell the tyrant, get off of my back? Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds, and if you're tired of the same old sugar-coated mush-mouth monologue of talk radio, join me for The Shooting Bench, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Central. Guns, self-defense, survival, current events are just a few of the topics that we'll discuss on The Shooting Bench, and we're going to start discussing them right now.
Have you forgotten?
The views expressed in the following broadcast are not necessarily those of Just Measures Radio or the owners or sponsors thereof. Any and all mention of laws, ordinances, or policies are not to be construed as legal advice or necessarily all-inclusive. The listener bears all responsibility in verifying this information. Be advised that this broadcast may be inflammatory to those with thin skin, limp wrists, and room temperature IQs. Furthermore, the statements expressed by the host may contain information known to the state of California to inspire free thinking and may promote unexpected growth of testicles and backbone. Listener is advised.
All right, here we are. Welcome to The Shooting Bench. It's Wednesday, the 4th of June, and boy, are y'all going to be mad at me tonight. I got a lot to do to get ready to go to the ranch. We got a class coming up this weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's a real enjoyable class, and I think it's an educational class. We spend, it's actually three classes together, if you all remember. M. Jantz and Casper Mountain got together one night and decided if I could put all three of them together that they'd both show up. Well, by golly, both of them are going to show up. So, and we got some other folks coming up from Phoenix too. So, but all that being said, I'm only going to be on for an hour tonight. I've got to finish getting ready and get out of here mucho early in the morning. So I hope you'll forgive me for that. Tomorrow night we should be on as usual. Tomorrow and Friday both, we should be, everything should be hunky-dory. So, I see where it looks like DeTinker put a web page together for Mother Earth and Concretin, and that's a good deal. Glad to hear that. I ought to give everybody something to watch there. Let me look here and see. Y'all need to let me know if we have any sound out there. I'm going to check and see real quick if I see these things working here. Yep, they should be okay. All right. Hang on a minute. Let me check the levels of this real quick. Might be a little low. Yeah, very little. Okay. All right. Minnie says it's good, so we'll just continue to march. All right, we're gonna start out here with a little bit of humor. I was looking at this. I was waiting in line at Walmart. We got some screenshots from a phone here. The guy caught his ex-girlfriend cheating with his best friend. So there's a dialogue between them here, and I'm gonna read it to you. It's not, there's not anything nasty on it. There ought to be, but there's not. This girl is a real Fruit Loop. Anyway, she says, so, I still like you a lot. He said, I like meth. She says, do you still like me? He said, no. Then there's a little picture, a little smiley face there, except a little frowny face. And he says, you never ask if I love you. And she said, aw, do you love me? He said, nah. Oh, yeah, there is a little bit of language in here. I forgot about this. She said, you're a dink. He said, I may be a dink, but at least I'm faithful. She said, it was just one guy. Wow, it was just one guy. The guy's name is Kane. She says, come on, Kane, please, I miss you. No guy has ever treated me as good as you. You're literally the sweetest and cutest guy on the planet. Will you please be mine again? And he says, sure. She said, really? And he said, no, go screw yourself. She says, there's more language in this than I remembered. She said, thanks for posting our text on Twitter and humiliating me, anal orifice. He said, it was just one tweet. She said, you've never been such a, let's see, how should I put that? Well, she said, you've never been such a jerk before. Are you on drugs? And he said, no, I'm on pugs. And he posts a picture of him wearing a pug t-shirt and holding a little pug dog, a little selfie. And she says, why don't you stop being a jerk? He said, why don't you stop breathing? Gosh, you're such an anal orifice. He said, I can see it in your eyes. You're angry now. She said, Kane, just please listen. I know you're mad, but we are just plain meant to be. I'm not mad at you for anything. As much as I try to not want you, I keep seeing signs that lead me to you. He said, me too. And he posted a sign of a special needs child crossing the road. Be rude all you want, but I still like you. And if you ever need anyone to talk to or hang out with, just call and I'll be there in a sec. He posted a picture of some guy. I don't know who that is. Said, we're not friends. Everything he's posting here are these little pictures. She said, can you actually say something to me, please? Posted a picture of this weird-looking little boy. It says, I like turtles. Why do you hate me? Despite the fact that you cheated on me with my best friend, I don't hate you. I strongly dislike you. Hate is more lasting than dislike. He said, Jesus, take the wheel. Did you really just quote Hitler? I knew you were crazy, but damn. So he posts a thing from Brainy quote here that says, hate is more lasting than dislike, by Adolf Hitler. She said, okay, I'm leaving. You don't have to talk to me again. But before I go, are you 100% sure that you're done with me? He said, let's put it this way. I'd rather listen to a Jonas Brothers song on repeat for a week straight than be with you again. Fine, be that way, Kane. Just know you'll never find someone like me again. And he said, yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. I want to at least be friends with you. He said, well, I want to do bad things to you. Oh, really? Like what? Murder your family. Don't talk, don't text me again. Bye, Kane. And last picture is him standing in the window flipping her off. Oh, boy, I thought that was funny, so I thought I better put that out there. Rights at risk. How'd you pick up a virus? Be careful out there. Viruses are something else. They sure caused me some heartache. It's been a long, long time, but it's nevertheless, they've caused me some heartache. Have you guys heard the news here of Gaston Glock? Well, apparently there is a possibility. Now, I don't get that. Well, I do get it. It's all about money. He's 84. Catherine Glock, his wife, fine-looking blonde, 33 years old. 51 years between them. He was 51 when she was born. But evidently, he still got it. He's, story goes here that they're expecting their, the fourth baby Glock.
Are those two people married?
That's Gaston Glock and some pretty blonde. And apparently he's still,
Catherine everything's, Glock, so that's her last name too?
That's, he's married to him.
Yeah,
it's his wife.
That's what I asked.
Yeah. So they're,
Wow. She found her sugar daddy, didn't she?
Uh-huh. And evidently, he's still got things working just fine. I don't know if this is, we'll find out here pretty soon. She's still looking as trim and fit as ever, they say, but it may have just happened. So,
wow.
May not be just yet.
Are you
going to
want some dinner or something?
Nah, probably not. What are you going to eat?
I still have stuff to do, so I'm not going to.
Okay. Well, no, I won't either. Okay. I'm going to cut my show short tonight. By an hour, so I got things to do too. I don't know. I'll talk about it in a little bit. Okay. Well, anyway, we'll find out here if that's true or not. If it is, that's going to be quite the deal. Looks like Sparky made it in here. Bunkin' Cat said hi, Amy. She's waving at you. All right. Mountain Shooter, you're my new best friend. I'll be right over there. I got something I need to talk to you about. Okay, baby Glock. All right, now here's a good one. It's a bad one, but it's a good one. How many times? Remember when I was? This was quite a while ago. I think some of you were still hanging around or been on since then. Amy and I went to Las Vegas for something. I don't remember what we went there for. And we went and visited a guy. It was a cop. He had gotten a modified AK-47 from us not too long prior to that, and one of the parts failed. And I said, well, you know what? I'm coming to Vegas day after tomorrow. I'll bring you what you need, and I'll fix it right there for you, and you won't have to be down any amount of time and be right in business. He said, that is awesome. I'd love to meet you. Okay, great. So we go there, and we talk to this guy, and we find out that it was one of those times when his wife said, We need some milk. We need a couple of things from the store. So I'm just going to be gone for a minute. Going down to Walmart. And he said, well, yeah, I'm just going to be a minute. I won't need my gun. I'm going to, already in sweats and comfortable and everything. So now he's a cop, remember, active. Full-time cop. So he hops in the car and runs down to Walmart and gets his stuff, and he's standing in line. And the second person ahead of him turns sideways so he could see him a little bit, and he says his blood just ran cold. this great big guy, black guy that he had arrested, had put away for some time, and the guy had always sworn that he'd kill him if he ever saw him. So here he is without his gun. So he, the guy turned and made eye contact with him, and just for a moment, he said, I think I know that guy, but he was in sweats and everything, so he wasn't easy. If he'd been in his uniform, he'd probably recognize him. But he turned back around, and the guy set his stuff down and just walked out the door. He said, I'm just going to be gone a minute. I won't need my gun. So here's a story for you, another story for you. I'll only be out a few minutes. That's what this person said when they walked out the door, jumped in the truck, realized that his firearm was still sitting on top of the office desk. Sadly, this wasn't the first time I've said this, but this day would prove to be the last time I ever use that line as an excuse not to be armed. Unlike most excuses for leaving a firearm behind, my excuse was different. Well, it wasn't because I felt that carrying a firearm was a burden or uncomfortable. It's quite the opposite. My method of carry was too comfortable. So comfortable, in fact, that I often don't feel that it's there on my body, or not. Yeah, I know what he's talking about. I've had that issue several times. It is imperative that you check and double check and make sure that you've either got it or not. Said, I had removed the firearm from my in-waistband holster while working on some designs, and it was late in the day. I wanted to stretch a little and never thought to reholster the firearm once it was removed. Fast forward a couple hours, and now I'm ready to take a short break, and I hadn't eaten all day. Thinking about my stomach, I grabbed the keys and promptly exited the house to get whatever greasy fast food I was sure would quiet down the growls coming from my stomach at this point. It didn't even cross my mind that I had forgotten to reholster my gun before exiting the house. I'll only be out a few minutes. I said it again as I pulled out of the driveway. He said, yeah, it's not like I'm going to be on the wrong side of town or anything. It's just a quick bite to eat and I'll be back. After a few minutes of driving, I noticed a male on the intersection. As I came to a slow stop, he approaches my passenger side window. I ignore him, thinking he's just a panhandler asking for money, but this one felt different. Everything felt different. As he approached my passenger side door, he mutters some words about cigarettes, but then, like a strike of lightning, he reaches for the door handle. Alarmed, I gave him a stern look, and right when I was about to give him a reactionary verbal lashing, I felt the back of my neck start to tingle. Something was very wrong. At that very moment, a sixth sense kicked in. I was compelled to turn to my driver's side door. As I turned to my left, I watched as another male had successfully opened my door. The one thing I vividly still remember is the knife coming towards my face and focused look on the attacker's face. I remember deflecting the knife hand with my left hand and grabbing his hand and forcing it up to the cab of the vehicle. In one smooth motion, my right hand sweeps my shirt and motions towards what normally would be a Glock 23 at the ready position at 3 o'clock. Instead, I was greeted with the cold, hard reality of an empty holster. I was pretty sure I blurted out an angry four-letter word. Hang on a minute. I was pretty sure I blurted out an angry four-letter word at that moment. At first, my mind was confused, but in an instant, I replayed the exact moment that I removed my gun earlier in the day. At this point, the attacker knew I had just tried to do something and became even more aggressive. He was tugging at my jeans, trying to reach for my wallet. Again, my sixth sense kicked off, and I realized that there was the other person on the other side, but this guy was more of an immediate threat. I couldn't lose focus of him. In the most convincing, defeated tone I could muster, I remembered yelling, okay, stop, just give me a second. This allowed me to reach back for what he thought was my wallet, It was enough of a diversion to allow me to reach my everyday carry knife. It felt like an eternity deploying that knife out to defend myself. My hands must have fumbled two or three times trying to get it. At this time, his gaze went down to my hand, and I knew that if he saw what I was reaching for, I would lose that moment of opportunity. I immediately kicked him, forced his knife hand up into the top of the cabin, and one fell stroke jabbed the knife into his forearm. I couldn't tell you how bad his injuries were. It happened so fast. I remember the attacker jumping out of the way from me and backed away a bit. But for whatever reason, it seemed like he was about to advance toward me for round two. At this point, I was seeing red, but knew getting into a knife fight with one attacker with another possible armed attacker in question was something I did not want to do. I don't know what compelled me or where I got the bright idea, but thinking as quickly as I could, I yelled, "You MFers, I'm an off-duty police officer." This was a bold-faced lie. Still not sure it was the best thing to say or do. In hindsight, what other choice did I have? It worked because the attacker's focus looked immediately turned to despair, and he ran away in the opposite direction. At this point, I glanced back behind me and noticed the other person is also running away in the same direction as the attacker. Seems I was right, and they were in the crime business together. I immediately jumped back into the vehicle, shut the door to get away to a safe public location to call 911. The keys were gone from the ignition. I frantically began searching the floor and the seats, thinking it may have fallen out during the altercation, but then noticed that the passenger door was slightly open. It was at this moment where I realized that I was wet. Not wet with sweat, wet with blood. My blood. I was sitting in a pool of it in my seat. I reached across and shut the door and made sure the doors were locked and immediately called 911 for emergency assistance. During my altercation with my attacker, the other person came in through the passenger door and stabbed me twice. Once in the back, 1 inch to the right of where my neck meets my spine, and once on my right between my ribs. Once on my right between my ribs. The back wound was a clean flesh wound, but the wound through my ribs was deep enough to puncture my liver. I'm really lucky to be alive. The second attacker from behind could have slit my throat instead of choosing to stab me. I spent a week in the hospital after the surgeon had opened me up to close my punctured liver, and I spent the next 2 weeks with a tube coming out of my gut to drain the internal fluids that were collecting inside of me. All of the police officers who responded got a kick out of the part where I put my biggest poker face on and boldly told the attacker that I was an off-duty police officer. Initially, the investigators thought it may have been an attempted carjacking, but they later stated that the attackers were more like addicts needing their next fix. Only addicts would be that bold to attack a vehicle at an intersection for maybe $20 that was in my wallet. To this day, the perpetrators have yet to be caught. In hindsight, it's really tough to say whether or not my firearm would have made a real difference. After all, I could have been stabbed early on from behind before I would have been able to deploy my firearm. With that said, I know I would have been more effective defending myself if I had the weapon. I would have had to rely on calculated bluff. I wouldn't have had to rely on calculated bluff to de-escalate the situation to stop the attackers from advancing a second time on an already wounded victim. I'll only be out a few minutes. Words I will never use again as an excuse not to carry a firearm. You never know when you'll be the victim. It can happen any time, any place, when you least expect it. Now, here there's an update to this. The guy writes in to answer some of the questions that people have asked, and this is some questions that I wondered. First question, and the most obvious to me, why were the doors unlocked? Now, guys, I'm 6'4", almost 250, and I carry a gun, got a considerable amount of training in various things. I lock my doors. I don't want to have to prove myself to anybody. I don't want to have to shoot anybody. I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to hurt anybody. If I'm in town, now, I don't ride around solo so much, but when I was in, you know, Atlanta and Dallas, Baltimore, wherever. Of course I locked my doors. Absolutely. But when asked why he didn't, he said some models auto-lock car doors when you put it in gear. Some put it in auto-lock after you go a certain speed. Other vehicles don't do anything. The vehicle I was driving when this incident happened automatically locks when you put it in gear. However, it does not auto-lock again if you ever manually unlock the door, to let someone in or accidentally hit it open. We have become too dependent on automatic things. Yes, I know they automatically lock. Yes, I also know that you have the capability of manually locking them when you get in and sit down. You don't have to wait for them to automatically lock. There's a button there that you can push and lock them as soon as you sit down. So I'm not buying that one. He said, I'm not sure how or why the door was unlocked, but when you're used to doors auto-locking, it's not like you're constantly thinking to always lock them again. I know I've accidentally unlocked my doors when attempting to push the button to lower the windows. Both buttons are close to each other. I don't know if that's what I did here, but it's very likely it's what happened, and I don't think to relock the doors because I was unaware that they were unlocked in the first place. Moral of the story? Don't assume anything. Don't assume your doors are locked or unlocked. Just like you shouldn't assume that your chamber is empty or that your 1911 safety is on or off. When you get comfortable, things go downhill fast when you assume wrong. Okay, I got to give this guy a lot of credit. Everything he said is absolutely the truth. He's absolutely correct. Most people, I would think, would... When you see the guy coming up, why wouldn't you automatically check the doors, hit it, and make sure that they're locked? I don't know. I wasn't there. Why were the windows open? He said, well, they weren't for the most part. The driver's side was open a crack, and the passenger side was closed. I was a smoker when this incident happened, and I crack my windows with the AC running full blast sometimes when I drive. Why didn't you drive off? This is what I tell my students. Drive away. If the light's red, if it's safe, run the light. If you can back up, back up. If you can turn and go the way that you don't want to go, turn and go the way that you don't want to go. But whatever you do, go, if you have the possibility. Why didn't you drive off? He said, I was in an intersection of a red light. When the first person approached me near the passenger side, the person posed no threat at the time to warrant me running a red light and possibly causing more death and injury in a collision with one or several vehicles crossing. Yeah, that's true. But you can look before you pull away. My passenger side window was closed, and I assumed my door was locked. Please see above. He was not yet in my immediate area of threat. I'm not going to draw my weapon every time a guy's on the curb asking for money. When the second person approached... goodness... When the second person approached from the driver's side door and successfully opened the door, I was in a moment of shock and unprepared. Again, the assumption was that my door was locked. Second, as soon as the door opened, a knife was flying towards my face. In that moment, my left hand immediately went to defensive maneuvers to block and detain the weapon arm. This was when I reached for my non-existent firearm. When I realized I didn't have it, I turned my body towards him to use my legs to kick the guy in the chest and grab my knife. What was going through your mind, they ask. He said, it's easy to armchair here, but the only thing on my mind was to keep the knife pinned up top while I pull my EDC knife out to defend myself. All other things did not matter or exist to me. I could have been in space for all that mattered. After the incident, the police noted that my vehicle had moved 5 yards from the stop line before stopping again. It means the vehicle was probably slowly moving during the altercation and only came to stop when the first person came in through the passenger side and either put it in park or shut off the engine and took the keys. Or he shut the engine off and took the keys before slamming it in park. Which explains where the keys went. 5, what could I have done differently? Some here say it would be to recheck the doors that were locked. But I challenge everyone here to honestly tell me that they check and see if their doors are locked at every intersection that they stop at. I guarantee that you don't, and if you have a vehicle that auto-locks, you probably have never relocked your doors manually while driving either. Some of the duh answers regarding my unlocked doors is exactly how I would have commented if this wasn't my story. However, that assumption and the security of your doors being locked is what will get you, in this scenario me, into trouble. The biggest thing I wish I had done is I wished I had been a little more aware of what was going on in the opposite direction. I'm typically very observant and situationally aware person. Unfortunately, I fell hard for the classic misdirection tactic that was used on me, and I think I could have read the misdirection tactic sooner. So there you go. Lots of questions and answers there. It shows pictures of the guy's wounds and everything. He was pretty bad. A lot of blood in the car. I'll put this picture in the chat room for you real quick. And look and see. Now, does this not concrete some of the things that I've said? Amy, if she'd have said, well, I'm just going to run out and feed the goats. I'll be back in a minute. I'm only going out for a few minutes. She might have died. Do I have a link to the story? Sparky, let me get you a link to the story. Yes, I do. I am just that kind of guy. I am Captain Awesome tonight. So I will get you a link to that. There you go. I don't know how many times it's I couldn't begin to guess. It's countless. How many times I have said, if you're going to carry a gun, carry a gun. Always. When you go outside, when you leave the house, when your feet are on the floor, when you stand up, you should be wearing, once you're dressed, you should be wearing your gun. Several thousand. You can do a search on woman killed in bathroom, woman killed in bedroom, couple stabbed in bathroom, something like that. Do you take your gun to the bathroom? Well, if you watch Psycho, you probably ought to. There's Edge of the Woods. Good to see you, buddy. By the way, I need to talk to you too. We need to get you on board here to contribute to the newsletter once a week if you're interested in doing that. We need to get a little short blurb from you once a week. Doesn't have to be much, a paragraph or two's plenty. But let me know if you can do that, and I'll get with you later on. So, I don't know what to say. I read these stories to people, and I relate a number of stories that are just like this one. Amy's story was it hit home for a lot of people. But just not enough to make some of them carry a gun. Even though it's a family member. People are not, it always has to be when it happens to somebody else. It happens to the neighbor. It has to, it never happened here. It happened to Amy. And she come close to being seriously injured or killed. Why wasn't she? She was wearing her gun. Well, anyway. That's enough of that stuff. But we do very strongly encourage people every day to put that gun in, practice, train, make sure how to clear it, how to load it, how to get it out in a compromising position, such as being trapped behind the steering wheel in your car, or being spread out in a prone or supine position on the ground when someone has their knee in your back and your chest or something like that, and in practice these kind of things. When we do a class called Applied Dynamic Responses, that is the kind of stuff that we practice. Kind of things that you don't always, not always able to do on a conventional range. You know, the hell, a lot of ranges won't even let you work from the holster any. So we do some stuff that is most unconventional in that class. But what I can promise you, beyond a doubt, is when you do that class, you have something for me? Uh-huh.
I have something to discuss very well.
Thank you. If you want it, doesn't matter. So, anyway, I got sidetracked there. But okay. On a lot of cars, at least on my pickup, I have the option. I can program that. I don't know how old your car is, but you might be able to look in there and see if that can be programmed into, you know, as soon as you start the car. All that really doesn't matter for this guy, though. He had accidentally bumped it open. He's assuming that they were locked, but he's hit the button somehow and didn't check it. This is part of a situational awareness issue here. And we can't judge him. He sounds pretty squared away. He lived. He managed to by having a level head and using good common sense and a rather unconventional tactic there, not to mention having his everyday carry knife available. He dealt with it and he got out of there. He had a few staples and stitches in him and everything, but he managed to get out of it. So we can't judge him too much. There's some things, yeah, he could have done differently, should have done differently, but like I said, he got out of it. There's Nid 4x4 again. Glad you made it in again. Mem Jantz out there on the road somewhere. He's probably, well, no telling where. He's probably somewhere around, somewhere between Gallup and Seligman. What time is it? Yeah, Flagstaff maybe. Somewhere in that area. Just guessing. But M. Jantz is on his way out to Schott's Ranch. We're gonna play with guns all weekend here. Hopefully it'll be worth his drive for him. And there's Aaron. Folding laundry. Well, better you than me, buddy. Good to see you. I hadn't heard from you for a while. All right, M. Jantz made it Flagstaff. Aaron, your gun is probably ready to be stippled right now. I won't see it until tomorrow, but it should be getting pretty close. We ought to get it back to you here in the next week or 10 days, at the very most. Matter of fact, I'll probably bring it home with me. Well, I can't do that either because we changed our FFL, so it needs to stay on the premises there. But anyway. All right, and one other thing here. Let's see. Nid 44 has got a good advice. You can't, at least it's on his car, I guess, you can't change the engagement. I can change mine. I can change mine to do whatever I want it to do. But you can turn it off and lock the doors yourself. I'm pretty sure that you can lock the doors yourself whether you turn it off or not. You might check it on your individual car and see. But if you're in town, a town of any size, if you're out somewhere, if you feel uncomfortable, I'll tell you what I did today. I was sitting down there waiting for Armored Recon to come by and bring me a key. And I sit out there. I had everything done. I couldn't get in the shop. I didn't have my cotton picking key. So I'm sitting there reading, messing with Facebook and stuff on my phone. And I was getting a little drowsy. I reached over and locked the door. I didn't want to fall asleep there. I knew I was tired, so I didn't want to fall asleep and have somebody just walk up and open the door on me. So, nobody's tough when you're sound asleep and somebody yanks that door open and pulls you out of there. So, all right, let's see here. Let me see if I can get another. We're getting pretty close. Like I said, Aaron, I'm sorry you didn't hear the first part here, but I'm getting ready to go out to the ranch, and I'm going to have to cut the show off a little early. I've got some things to do. As a matter of fact, one of the things I need to do is make sure that I have loaded up everything I need to stipple your gun so we can get that done for you and get it out of here. By the way, those of you that are so inclined now, we have our Glock businesses back in service. Our Glock dry practice kits are back on the market. Matter of fact, I'm taking a sack full of them up there with me to the ranch. I think M. Jantz, I believe, probably still wants a couple of them. Another thing that I forgot to tell you, I'll mention this for the rest of the week, and Monday I'll make the order. I'm ordering survival tabs on Monday. This is going to be the best price that you'll ever see on survival tabs. $21.75 a bottle if you order 10 bottles or more. If it's any less than 10, then it's going to be $26. That's still pretty cheap. You get them from the factory, they're $32.50. So we're offering a pretty good deal here. But for those of you that are so inclined to get your food storage squared away in the probably in one of the best ways that you can, survival tabs are the way to go. We've got a bunch of them here, but we always add to it. Every time I make an order for anybody, I always throw in a few bottles on for us too, so I can keep that stockpile built up there. So if y'all want any, need to let me know. goose stipples, huh? Yeah, it'll be a whole new gun, buddy. Aaron was pretty taken out. Aaron was like, Aaron, I'm gonna tell on you a little bit here. I hope you don't mind. Aaron is like so many people, like most people, most Glock owners will get out there and say, yeah, it fits my hand fine. I do fine with it. And like about 90% of them that we talked to, Aaron said the same thing. When I showed him a little trick about locking your wrist and not looking at the gun and putting them, this is very similar. That's not very similar. It's exactly the same thing as when, in our rifle class, we tell people, get all settled in, bring your gun up your shoulder, get your sights on target perfectly, close your eyes, count to 10, open your eyes and see if you're still on target. Another thing you can do is get on target like that, get where you feel you're right, and then close your eyes, lift your head up off the gun, put the head back down on the stock, and see if you're anywhere as close to your target. If you have to adjust, then you got something going on there. Your feet are wrong, your torso's not right, you're not high enough off the bench, something like that. So this is the same thing with the Glock, with any handgun, not just the Glock, doesn't make any difference, with any handgun. And I have proven many times that natural point of aim that you have with a modified Glock goes, the bullet goes where your finger points. At moderate distances, bedroom distances, even up to 5-7 yards. You don't even need to see the sight. You can, as a matter of fact, I have a video on YouTube called Out of Sight, where I have taken the sights completely off of a Glock. It's a flat top, bare slide, nothing to provide reference whatsoever. But because the gun fits my hand, I can come out of the holster just as fast as I possibly can and make 100% hits out to, I think I went out to, I don't remember, 10 or 15 yards. And then I went over to another target and practiced, you know, doing it slowly. And at 7 yards, I think I was shooting 2 or 3 inch groups with no sights on the gun. It's all about that natural point of aim. If it fits your hand, the bullets will go where your finger points. If it doesn't fit your hand, you're going to have to work at it quite a bit harder. And once I had demonstrated that to Aaron out there when I went out in California, as bad as I hated being in California, I had a real good time with Aaron, and I look forward to going out there again, and maybe we can get him to come out in this part of the country one of these days. But anyway, it was a lot of fun. We went out to one of those rare places in that particular part of California where we could just go out and shoot to our heart's content and not have to answer to anybody and not have to wait for people to go set up targets and all that kind of stuff. We just went out and played and had fun. Okay, wait a minute. I have breaking news. No, that's not so great. By the way, there may be another issue coming up here similar to or even possibly more severe, more dire than the Bundy Ranch issue. There are people down in Brownsville, Texas, that claim that things are starting to get a little bit out of hand down there with the illegals and the cartels and all that. So we're looking to try to verify some information. And if it is verified, we may actually wind up having to deploy again. I'm not looking forward to that one. It's 1,200 miles down there. But anyway, we'll see what happens. There's a lot of stuff going on the border every day. And we have people on the border every day. I mean, there's folks down there the full length of it, you know, here and there that are... Hang on, I've got breaking news. What's breaking, Mom?
I'm just asking, do you want this in your salsa? Want this in your salsa?
Try it and see what happens.
Am I making one batch or two? I only saw two things of tomatoes.
Oh, well, if we've only got two, then we probably only can do one.
Okay. Do you want all 9 jalapenos in one batch?
Probably not. Okay. Maybe 6. Right, hang on, we're getting.
Anyway, I'm watching this O'Reilly on there.
Here we have news report coming from the other room.
I've never seen his show, but he says that he's got a segment on his show that says, "Have you seen that?" Some guy said that they found a tweet from
his dad.
No,
Bergdahl's dad. Yeah,
says that something about I'm doing all I can to free Guantanamo prisoners.
Yeah.
And that's so you know you've seen that.
Okay. Yeah, and that's Amy's coming in. She's watched the news deal in here, and this Bergdahl thing is taking on a life of its own. It's amazing. It's astonishing to me that the woman that talked on the news earlier. Anyway, that said, talked about his. Oh, I forgot what they call it, his wonderful service and all that. And he had the promotion while he was away. He should be a private. And here's his dad out there on TV talking in Arabic. He sent tweets out saying that he's wanting to free all the prisoners in Guantanamo Bay.
God will have no mercy on all the Afghan children that have been killed.
Wow.
And that tweet has since been removed.
Well, so we've got the whole thing, boy, 4x4, boy, you ain't kidding. It makes me, you know what pisses me off worse than anything about that is the fact that he on the news a while ago, the news anchor feller, whatever he was, asked the a soldier that had served with this guy, and he said something about the traitor. And the guy said, well, I don't know if I'd use the word traitor, but he's a deserter anyway, and he's a deserter of his unit and his country. And all. He's a traitor. He's, you know, it seemed obvious. The guy said that once, look what Minnie just posted there, that there's a welcome home parade in honor of Bergdahl is canceled after an army commander called it a monstrous profanity. I'll have to check that out. Mayor cancels the planned welcome home celebration. This guy's got to have some problems. I don't know if they're going to turn him loose. He's got this welcome home parade. This thing is very, very suspicious to me. If they turn him loose, I have absolutely no doubt. I have zero doubt. He's going to blow something up, shoot somebody, or both, or whatever, and probably very soon. If they keep him, they'll have to admit wrongdoing in a couple of ways. But the... it seems to me, and I said this last night, and I'm going to say it again, it seems to me that this thing may very well have been completely set up from the beginning. I think it's a possibility. That may be a little bit of a stretch, but I think it's a possibility. At the very least... Bergdahl himself knew that this was going to happen and had planned it from the beginning. The 4x4, I didn't hear Fox say that, but if they said that this was a juvenile decision, they're full of it. This was extremely calculated. It was extremely devious, extremely cunning. This was well planned, I think, there's not any other way. There's not another, there's no chance that this could be an accident. That's a good point. Not too late. He's a defector, not a deserter. Deserters just get out of the area and don't you know, they're not where they're supposed to be and they don't come back till later, but he actually went over to the other side. He's a traitor, he's a defector, he's a liar, he's a coward, and a lot of people got hurt because of him. So I have issues with this whole thing, if you hadn't figured that out by now. So I'm not it's going to be interesting to see how they allow this to play out. Because they have a couple of things that they have to consider as they do this. And the thing that bothers me, one of the several things about this that bothers me, is the fact that he did this without talking to Congress. Obama did. Without getting congressional approval for this. How did he do that and get away with it? Why isn't there more being said about this? Let's consider this, especially people that live in big cities. I would say, you know, coming soon to a town near you. What kind of a diversion are we dealing with here? If he doesn't do anything. Look at the diversion. Look at where America's attention is centered right now and has been for the last couple of weeks, a week or so. Um, every time something like this has happened, something worse was right at risk. That could be part of it. Yeah, the VA scandal taken right off the front page. Nobody's paying attention to that. Nobody's thinking about it anymore. And rights at risk is correct, and I said this last night. He was there for 5 years. Usually they don't let him stay for 5 weeks, 5 months maybe. And when they do, they look bad, they're out of shape, they've lost a lot of weight, they look like they have sores and stuff on them. This guy, not so much. He looked pretty well. So we'll see. Well, I'm sorry to cut you guys short tonight. I hate it, but I have got some things to get ready. I have to haul a lot of stuff up to Schott's Ranch this weekend. So I need to spend some time getting that stuff put together. M. Jance is going to beat me over there in the morning. I was planning on being there tonight. But he's going to beat me there. Well, no, he won't either, because he's probably going to spend... he's about 3 hours, 2.5 hours from there if he drives fast. But he's probably going to want to spend 2 or 3 hours in Seligman. Let me tell you real quick before I sign off about Seligman, Arizona. Seligman is one of the most awesome little towns I've ever been to. Seligman, when I was a kid, was nothing. It was a flaky little town. Out in the middle of nowhere that had nothing. I remember stopping in a coffee shop there one time when I was a kid, and I was not impressed. I didn't like the coffee. It was nothing. I-40, well, it was before I-40 was there. There was a little Highway 66, Route 66, went right through downtown Main Street, Seligman, which is still their main street. Now, this little old town... don't amount to nothing. There can't be more than, 400, 500, 600 people there. And they've got 6 or 7 full-time active operational motels running. 2 big restaurants, several gas stations. Because they've, every little old, they've got museums there. And with lots of memorabilia, you know, pictures and shirts and books and most interesting thing. M. Jance, I'm going to tell you, if you do that, I strongly recommend that you look at a few of those books. They may not mean as much to you as they do to me, but since, you know, I remember that road when it was operational, and, you know, you can trust your car to the man that wears a star and a little Texaco thing down there and SO and all that kind of stuff. So it's really appealing to me. I really, really like that town. And I think you will too. So if you get started in there, you've got several places to look. When you get to the end of the town, be sure that you stop at Lilo's and tell them you're going to be going out to Schott's Ranch and ask for your discount. And man, I don't know what to tell you to get. They've got awesome food there. If I'm not terribly well, I can't say that, because I was gonna say, if I'm not terribly hungry, I'll just grab a bratwurst. They've got great big damn bratwurst down there, and they bring out mustard just like I had in Germany. This is stuff that it comes in a little foil, a little metal tube like toothpaste, and that's just the way we got it when I was in Europe. And you get fries, buddy, you better be hungry, because there's plenty of fries there. Anyway, let us know. We'll have more. Matter of fact, I think what I'll do is I'll bring Amy's mic up there with me, and we might get M. Jance and or Casper Mountain on the air with us here tomorrow night for Liberty Lounge. So, with all that being said, I'm going to sneak on out of here. I got to get my archives ready to go here, so bear with me a minute, and I will see y'all tomorrow night. We don't know for sure what's going to happen with Amy's show in the morning. It's probably not going to happen.
nasty.
Yeah, because I don't know. I wanted to get out early today, and I had planned on Amy going with me and doing everything up there, and then we found out she's got obligations on Sunday and couldn't go with me. So bless her heart, she spent all day cooking and trying to take care of scroungy me so I could go and take care of this stuff here. M. Jantz, you will be getting Amy's cooking. She's working on it now. And so I was way late leaving. So be that as it may, we're out of here, and we'll see you all tomorrow night. Thanks for joining me.
This has been The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds of Southwest Shooting Authority.